take some time to offer some reflections on the themes of silence, insight, and kindness. But I'd like to start with a few lines from a longer poem by a woman called Martha Postlethwaite. She says, "Do not try to serve the whole world or do anything grandiose. Instead, create a clearing in the dense forest of your life and wait there patiently." And I chose these lines because they spoke to me about what we're doing here. That in a way, how we gather together and spend our time over these 5 days is creating that clearing in the forest of our lives. In a retreat setting like this, the silence that we give ourselves to is perhaps the most obvious way that we create this clearing. And we mark out this time as being different to the rest of our lives. And I know from conversations I have with friends and work colleagues who are not meditation practitioners, who don't go on retreats, the thing they're often surprised by or would be concerned by is the idea of being in silence. They wonder how it would be for a day, for a week, or for longer. But as you might have discovered on this retreat or on others that you've been on, the silence is not always the most challenging part about being here. Plenty can happen in the silence, and indeed that is its function. So the outer silence of the retreat container is where we enter this clearing, we put aside some of the busyness of our lives. Now in this online retreat format, for some of us, the container is slightly different. We might not be fully in silence. We might be interacting with other people in our household or having to do some work in between. So we might be moving between the retreat space and the rest of our lives. But at least for the times when we're practicing together, we hold the silence and we draw our attention inward. And for those of you who've been on residential retreats at centres like Gaia House or elsewhere, you'll probably be familiar with the experience where, even though there is the outer silence, our minds can still find plenty of problems, even when there's no talking. The food's not quite right, the beds are not as comfortable as we want them to be, the weather isn't as good as it was this time last year. And so the outer silence reveals much of our internal busyness and what can sometimes feel like a fairly relentless inner dialogue, a complaining mind. And for many of us, those same tendencies operate in our daily lives, and they'll operate during our time on retreat from our own homes. While it's true that we require supportive conditions to see clearly and deeply, it's also true that there may not be so much silence when we're doing a retreat from home. And some of you have spoken about the challenges of this in your small groups. But while it's helpful to have the outer conditions for practice, it's really the inner silence that gives us the space to listen more carefully that we're looking to cultivate. And this kind of inner silence that I'm speaking of here is not the complete absence of any kind of mental activity, but rather the non-reactivity of mind. A kind of allowing that doesn't make a problem out of every experience that arises. However, I'm aware that even this phrase, the non-reactivity of mind, can conjure up all sorts of ideas and images about what a good meditation practice looks like. So I would just encourage you to be cautious of any ambitions you might have to completely stop your minds. Those of you with some experience may already know the challenges involved in taking that approach. While the mind can grow exceptionally still and quiet, this is not the gold standard of a meditation practice. We're actually more interested in turning towards our experience. And the outer silence is simply what helps us to attune and become more sensitive to the sensations in the body, to thoughts, to our emotional life, and to all the passing mind states. Anything that arises at one of our sense doors has an impact. Sights arrive at our eyes, sounds at our ears. We have smell, we have touch, we have taste. And the mind is also a sense door. The mind also receives. And that's not to say that every experience always registered in the conceptual mind. But it's the heart mind, the chitta, that is extremely sensitive to everything that happens for us. And for any of you who aren't familiar with this term, it's a Pali word that gets translated as heart mind, spelt Citta, chitta. And of course, in the English language, we have two words, not one. We have heart, which is kind of somewhere here in our chest, and we have mind. We don't often think of them as part of the same organ of perception. Whereas in the original languages of the teachings, they are not separate words for that which is whole, that which is resonant, receptive, and sensitive in us. The citta is impacted by all experience, both inner and outer. This whole human sensitive resonance that get touched, that is citta. Very often, without wise discernment, when citta is coloured by experience, we see this as who we are and we suffer. This is actually a closing down of the heart mind, a closing down of the citta. It shrinks, it withdraws, it contracts. It gets shaped. It's not who we are, but we take it to be ourselves. Sometimes our citta is expanded and bright and clear and really, really open. And of course, our intellectual minds can be open. We can be open to alternative perspectives and viewpoints. But when the citta is really open, it also includes the conceptual mind, but is much bigger. But our citta isn't always like that. Sometimes, and you probably will have seen this, we feel tight, we can feel contracted. Sometimes we feel filled with hatred or rage, and we take this to be who we are. And yet, this is not us. This is just the quality of the heart mind in that moment, which comes together dependent on causes and conditions. The textures, the resonances, colors and the ways the citta shows up are infinite. There are infinite possibilities in the way the citta can be colored, impeded, affected, sensitized. And it affects how we show up, affects how we show up in our lives. This coloration, this flavoring, this mood of the citta, this mood of the heart mind affects how we see the world. When the citta is filled with kindness, we don't look out on the world and see pain and hatred everywhere. And yet you may have had the experience of being consumed by anger and seeing the world in a very different way to those moments when you're filled with thoughts of kindness, when the citta is calm and expanded. We see the world in a different way, and we experience ourselves in a particular way. The way that we see the world is never neutral. There is always a flavour, there is always a mood, there is always a tone. The way we see is coloured, as though we see through a lens. And that colour and that lens that affects how we see affects what we experience and how we feel about it. Some of these lenses will be familiar and obvious to us. But we also have very deep ways in which we see the world that are invisible to us. They silently shape the way that we see. And there's also a kind of double loop in that the way that we see also further shapes our way of seeing. So in order to sit with this sensitivity that we are, we need a willingness to be here. This is the here of mindfulness that Jaya spoke about in her talk yesterday. This practice of arriving, of landing, of grounding, of being here enables the development of certain qualities of patience, of steadfastness, the ability to hang on in there even when things are difficult. These are some of the paramitas, the perfections that the Buddha spoke about. Sitting with our sensitivity also supports the cultivation of courage, of friendliness, of another way of meeting our experience that doesn't lead to further entanglements, to further suffering. Very often we need both courage and friendliness in order to stop. Just to stop and be still, so that we can attend to what arises in us when we take our seat and we sit in silence. And as we sit, as we practice, we'll often observe and we will say that things come up. Things come up in our practice, things come up in our life, things come up in our meditation. And we can sometimes feel that what is happening, what has arisen, is a mistake. We may have the sense that this wasn't what I wanted to have or what I asked for. I didn't sign up on this retreat to experience my anger or my loneliness. All I wanted was peace and letting go. And I remember probably some 25 plus years ago, my first trip to India. And this was in the days before the internet, when you just had the one guidebook and you took that with you. There was no YouTube or social media. You couldn't see videos and hear from other people about the experiences unless you already knew someone who'd been. And so when I arrived in Delhi one August, it was very different to how I expected it to be. All the pictures I'd seen were of a sunny land, thronging with people, and it was pouring with rain. It was damp, it was cold. This wasn't what I expected. And we know this from our lives and from our practice, don't we? That the reality is not what our minds think it is going to be. And that's not to say that it's always worse. We tend to notice it when it's worse. Often reality is far kinder than all the stories we tell about it. On an inner level, at times, we don't always know our experience until it registers in the conceiving mind. But it's actually arising prior to that moment, prior to the point where we've suddenly realised what's happening. It's starting to gather, it's starting to collect, it's filling the chitta. There are feelings, there are perceptions. We have this incredible sensitivity to what is happening. And yet sometimes the lights just don't go on until it reaches our thinking mind. As we discover on retreat, there are all kinds of things going on when we sit with our own heart and mind. We sit to sensitize ourselves to what is happening by grounding in the body and through the here of mindfulness. What's happening? What's my experience in this moment? And then there's a particular aspect of our experience which you may have encountered. That of the inner critic. And this inner judge can really contribute to some very painful and contracted mind states. It is often telling us how we're doing, whether we're doing okay, whether we did right, whether we're wrong, whether I'm good, whether I'm bad. It's always a very binary suffering. We're either doing okay or we're not. Either we're getting puffed up because we think we're on track, or we're kind of collapsed because it's not going so well. And we know this from our everyday life. Many of you, if not all of you, will have experienced this. I certainly know this in my life. But when we come on retreat, we might find that we have an upgraded version, the spiritual inner critic, that is evaluating how well we're doing, not in terms of what we think, but in terms of the teachings. Do we have enough collectedness? Are we sitting straight enough? Are we mindful enough? How's our walking practice? Are we straight enough? Are we tall enough? Have we had enough insights? And maybe that moment of irritation that passed through our minds is proof that we really don't know as much as we thought about kindness. So our thinking mind can pick up the teachings as another means of comparing and evaluating ourselves. And at one stage in my own practice, I must have picked up the idea, I think mostly unconsciously, that being a good Dharma student meant sitting later and longer. And I don't really remember this being what I thought, what I consciously thought, but I found myself putting in more effort, staying up quite late, staying beyond the final bell. And sometimes making myself quite tired, which made the next day's meditation more difficult. And what I eventually realised was that I was trying to live up to a particular internalised image I had, rather than looking more closely at what was happening to me. And I think it was probably on the evening when I realised that I actually didn't want to be in the Dharma hall any longer. The teachings were over. The final bell had been rung, and I'd stayed on as had become my habit. But I felt conflicted. I didn't want to get up. I didn't want to leave. This isn't what good Dharma students do. They sit on late into the night. And I really know that I heard from my teachers many times about the instruction of balancing effort and relaxation. And yet my own particular way of hearing this was not to relax, not to give myself an easier time, but to work really hard. I brought my familiar ways of doing things from the rest of my life to my practice, and I tried to do it better, or whatever my idea of better was. So we can so easily start to judge ourselves for a lack of striving, a lack of compassion, a lack of insight. And a sense of shame can invisibly start to collect around our practice. We're not doing it right. Maybe somebody noticed. If I say what's going on, then it'll all be revealed. It can be really hard to notice this happening. It's so subtle. It creeps in. It's like the mist at dawn. It just starts to collect. But there are clues in our experience if we can look closely enough. When our thinking is starting to undermine what we know, starting to undermine what we've learned, it keeps us where we are. It's maintaining the status quo as limited rather than expansive, as bonded rather than free. For the Buddha, on the night of his enlightenment, it was simply enough for him to say, "I see you, Mara." And as the legend has it, he reached down and he touched the earth with his hand. And sometimes that's what we need, to be able to notice and name what is happening for us. And in that process of naming and identifying what it is, we get a little more unstuck. We get some space, we get some distance from what's colouring our perception. We are not so hooked into the mind state of the moment. So we use this brilliant mind and our sensitivity to, in the service of wisdom, this capacity for insight to de-identify, to disidentify from what is not helpful and supportive, from that which does not lead onwards. This clear seeing is powerful, and the heart mind also starts to become clarified. And in that clarity, we are less vulnerable to identification and inhabiting a more limited, separate sense of self. And as we go deeper, we may see other more subtle forms of identification. And so we often go through the same cycles of noticing and naming and disidentifying, noticing that somehow we've got hooked into a story, often a familiar one, about who we are. And we disidentify, knowing that this is not me, not mine, not who I am. We were always in this process of learning to discriminate and put down what is not helpful on the journey. This is a moment-to-moment practice, not something we perfect. You can also use that touching the earth gesture. I've used it myself. So in your practice, maybe in the midst of an overwhelming or painful emotion or a multiple hindrance attack, just allowing the hand, just allowing the fingers to touch the earth, to make contact, using this as a way to be here, finding that point of connection between body and earth. And then whatever storms are present in that moment, maybe they can start to slow and eventually come to rest. And so in this tradition, there are two great paths that we've been offered on this journey to liberation, to awakening. The paths of insight and of kindness. And these relate to the two questions offered at the start of the retreat. Both lead to the same place and both are necessary. Sense for yourself right now, are you leaning more on the side of insight or more on the side of kindness? How is it you know? What tells you this? If you're one who has favoured insight and clear seeing, what we could say is an unentangled knowing. You will know the clarity and the precision that is available to us. That brings release from the contracted mind, which we get so easily identified with. It becomes who we are. When a contracted mind is present, the experiences that arise become melded with us. They came. It's like we can't see the gap. We can't see that they're separate. We fail to discriminate them as experiences that arise in this heart and mind and will eventually pass. We take them to be who and what we are, and we suffer. Many of us were probably drawn to these teachings because they offer the possibility and a path to freedom. We sense for ourselves, don't we, that there must be another possibility than repeating the same patterns. But in the moments when we're feeling dull, bored, angry, lonely, distracted, you can insert your own mind state there, you know, whatever's going on for you, whatever you notice. We'll all have our own particular favourites. We think this is who we are. We don't only think this, we feel like this. It feels like who we are. This is a very embodied experience, not just up there in our minds. It feels true. Our whole organism reflects the experience of the citta. And then stories and thoughts form around those experiences. This is who I am. This is what I'm like. We forget in that moment that all experiences are insubstantial, impermanent, that they arise dependent on causes and conditions, including our way of seeing, including our way of meeting our experience. From the perspective of the contracted mind, these experiences seem like a problem, but they arise in order to be liberated. And it is how we meet them, it is how we attend to our experience in the moment that brings freedom. Our usual way of relating to experience is to get away from what we don't like, or to hold on what we perceive as pleasant. And actually, both are painful. Probably about 3 or 4 years after I started practicing in this tradition, I was going on retreats several times a year, and usually I'd love to stay at the end of the retreat and connect with people and enjoy the gardens at Gaia House and reflect on the week with my partner, who I often was on retreat with, or the people I've got to know. And I was really, really touched by the teachings. You know, I really felt connected with myself and with the people I'd shared the retreat with. And I just often didn't want to leave. I didn't want to go home. Didn't want to go back to my job. I just wanted to stay. And then at the end of one retreat, I just wanted to get away. Something in my experience was difficult for me to be with. But rather than noticing this, rather than identifying it, I was just being pushed by this inner discomfort. Without realizing, I'd become identified with this feeling. And rather than wanting to hang out as long as I usually did and be part of the after retreat discussions and connect with everyone, I had my bags packed, my room was hoovered, the bags were in the car quite a bit earlier than usual. This was only partially in my awareness at the time. But rather than turning towards my experience, I just wanted to get away. Rather than meeting my experience and feeling it so it could be liberated, I was repelled by it. A little like where you get those magnets. I don't know if you had those when you were a kid and you try and push the, I think it's the same poles together, the north and the north, they just don't go together, and they kind of, there's that force field and they bounce off each other, and however hard you push, they'll just kind of slide out of the way. It was like that. I was just, couldn't go near whatever was happening for me. I could feel the push. I could feel the desire to get away. And when my partner brought their bags down from their room, I remember putting him in the car and being quite chirpy and upbeat, going, okay, right, ready to go. Jangling the keys, should we go? Then off down the driveway, off through the lanes, kind of rushing myself away from the retreat. Something was unsettling and I didn't like it. This can just as easily happen on the cushion. And yet this is a real opportunity for us. We have our experiment here when we get to sit with our experience. Often we don't see that our experience is calling to be worked with, calling to be met. Not because it has some inherent self-existence, because all experience is ultimately empty. But it needs to be acknowledged so it can be released. So it's not an accident if we're feeling distracted or angry while we sat on the cushion, or sad or lonely, or maybe thinking we're the best yogi in the world. Whatever our particular sankhara is, whatever our particular pattern, we all have our own. This is just our undigested material that has been given space by the silence that we cultivate, by the clearing in the forest that we've created. This is in the midst of the turbulence of each moment and in the midst of the turbulence of our lives. And that turbulence is also inherently empty, not ultimately real, but it arises in the moment and when worked with, gives way to a clear, spacious, unentangled knowing. So just take a moment and let yourself breathe. Let the flesh of your body relax into the floor, the cushion, the chair, whatever you're sitting on. And just as we did yesterday afternoon in the guided practice, sense how it is for you when I say the word kindness. Just sense what happens to you when you hear that word. What's the impact? What's the resonance? What are the ripples that spread out from that? Kindness is the second path that the Buddha offered us. The first is insight, and the second is kindness. And it's not that we do the insight and then we do the kindness. We can follow either to the same destination, they lead in the same direction. But for most of us, and this is true for me, it is usually necessary for kindness to be interwoven with our insight practice. In order to be equally near all things, in order to really meet our experience, we need kindness and we need compassion. We need to be able to allow our heart mind to resonate along with whatever is arising for us in the moment so that we can attend to it in the most skillful way available to us in that moment. Kindness can certainly be strong and firm. It doesn't mean that we don't set boundaries and know what we need for our own well-being. But there's also a non-reactivity that is possible, a softness, a pliability in kindness that allows us to relax some of our more defensive and driven ways of being. For example, we might be an achiever, a doer. Our tendency might be to overcome obstacles, to push through, to get to the other side. And if that is us, perhaps the last thing in our minds is to bring kindness to ourselves and the situations we're facing. It often doesn't occur to the parts of us that are striving to get somewhere else, to be kind in the moment. This is something we're practicing, this is something we're learning, something we're cultivating. It's an act of kindness to reach out and touch the earth, to acknowledge where we are and our intention to be here for our experience. After several days, or maybe many years of practice, we might think that somehow everything that's going to arise has already arisen, but then more stuff starts to come up. We are offered more material to work with. We can come on the retreat with the idea that we're putting stuff down and we're letting go. But actually that moment of stopping and touching the earth is that moment of kindness where we bear witness to our experience. Where we look again through different eyes rather than those familiar, well-worn grooves in our heart mind. It's kindness that invites us to see what is needed in the moment. Some experiences may be too overwhelming, too difficult. And so it may be the kindest thing to go for a walk, to get some rest, to smell the flowers in the garden, so that we skillfully cultivate some space between our experience and our reactions to it. This helps us revitalize and resource ourselves so that more of us is available to be with the inner turbulence that can arise, as well as the turbulence of the world. What is it that you would like to offer yourself in this moment? Sense what your heart mind needs right now. What is it that's being called for? Not last week, not this morning, not tomorrow, but right here and now. Whether your experience is tight, contracted, spacious or wide, see what is needed. See what the wisest response is for you in this moment. I have here a very short poem from Rilke, who says, "It's here in all the pieces of my shame that I now find myself again. I yearn to belong to something, to be contained in an all-embracing mind that sees me." Kindness is needed because how we show up is familiar. We know how we show up. We've seen ourselves. We've met ourselves so many times. And because of this familiarity, we take it to be us rather than what is arising in the citta, rather than our sankharas, our patterns. We get identified with it and it feels familiar. We've been here before and it's painful to repeat the same patterns. The Buddha's great contribution was not to see that we repeat the same patterns, but rather that it is how we attend to our experience that makes the difference. With the arising of contact through any of the sense doors, there is a feeling tone, the Vedana. That feeling of pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral that arises on contact and drives us to move either towards what is pleasant, away from what is unpleasant, or we simply tune out, numb out, or space out when it's somewhere in the middle. The first time I sat a personal retreat at Gaia House, I didn't expect it to be so challenging, and I was more used to doing group retreats. And so to be out of contact with people was quite different for me. But what I did notice is I kept finding myself in the library in the evening, searching for some kind of sustenance, some kind of book, a talk, a leaflet. This was back in the days where you had to get the cassette tapes out of the library and the Walkman and the batteries at Gaia House. Looking for some kind of entertainment or input so that I didn't have to feel so alone, so I didn't have to be where I was. Trying to fill myself up from the outside because what I was experiencing internally was difficult to be with. Not in some dramatic, overwhelming kind of way, but I just wasn't sufficiently attuned to what was happening. So with the contact that we have with our experience and the feeling tone that it has for us, we tend to cling to our experience as I, me or mine, and then we suffer. In that moment of clinging, we become someone. We become separate. The Buddha taught that suffering arises out of feeling separate. And it's to the degree that we identify as a separate self that we have the feeling that something is wrong, that something is missing. We want life to be different to how it is. This sense of separateness amplifies feelings of vulnerability and fear, grasping and aversion. Feeling separate is a kind of disconnection in which we have forgotten our wholeness. So as we sit in meditation, a familiar pattern arises. Maybe a fantasy, an anger, a fear, a mean thought, the ache of loneliness, distraction. Can we notice the impulse to move towards or away from this experience? In moving towards or away or numbing out, we inadvertently take this to be who we are. And we cling to this identity, even when it's not what we want to be. So in each moment, we are cultivating the skill to pay a deep and very kind attention to our body and our mind, the citta, this heart mind, so that it can become a refuge rather than something to escape from or to indulge. It can direct us to ever more skillful ways of being with our experience and crucially towards understanding what's happening. To understand that all experience arises dependent on causes and conditions. And if we can handle this skillfully, it can cease. And it's in the ceasing that we find a deep freedom. And so to end, I'd like to read a short poem. Walk with me out into the night. Be with me as I travel this journey of many thousand miles. Only you will understand me, where I have come from and where I am going. Empty field, silent forest, my own tender heart. A solitary bird song pierces the silence and disappears into the night. Stillness just is in those moments, all that ever could be and all there ever was. A tree laid bare against the night sky. The absence of signs lead me homeward. Uncertainty destroyed, the great way leads on. So let's just sit quietly for a few moments and I'll ring the bell. Thank you for your attention.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.